This is the Top 25 Rundown, and here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown, sponsored by the Sportscast. Today is January 6, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to my channel's YouTube, Twitter, and Apple Podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating review. It'll help us out tremendously. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast. You can also visit us on sportscast.net. Also follow us on Twitter at the Sportscast1. And check out our app, the Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Good evening. My name is Alan West. Welcome to the special edition of the Top 25 Rundown. We had a preview show for college football earlier in the year, and, well, now we're finally at the, I guess you say, the end of it. We have Christopher Caravello, writer for West Coast College Football and co-host of the Southern Gentleman Sports Show on the Ticket, 8:50 a.m., normally in Pensacola, Florida, but today up in Virginia Beach. Chris, how you doing tonight, bud?
Hanging in there. Glad to be here. I can't believe that's the end of another college football season.
Yeah, it's a scary thought, but it just means we get to start planning for the next year, so that's a good thing. We also have Tyler Turner from the TurnerCast, who me and him made a lot of fun picks this year. And how are we doing tonight, sir?
Good, man. Sorry, I can't turn my camera on. I'm driving in the middle of – I'm actually in Virginia with
him. So. Just come on down,
maybe,
man.
Yeah, maybe I'll – I'm heading to northern Arlington area, but
got it.
Head over to I'd rather be on the beach.
Yeah, come up near I am, so just watch out for the traffic. It's going to be fun. But rounding out this evening, participants, we also have Byron Jones, who is a former college football player at Tulsa and also played for the Minnesota Vikings as well. How are we doing, Byron?
Doing wonderful. Just beautiful weather in Pennsylvania, 74 one day and 29 the next. So the weather's all over the place. So I'm just dealing.
Yeah, I understand about that. Before we talk about the championship matchup between Georgia and TCU, I just want to take a few minutes to talk about what happened on Monday Night Football. As many of you know, Damar Hamlin, he collapsed on the field and he had CPR and had to have an AED used on him for about 20 minutes while they took him to the Cincinnati hospital. And compared to when we were going to do our show on Wednesday, he's made a lot more progress to where now he is as his breathing tube taken out. He's able to do videos a little on FaceTime with his teammates and with other people. And it just, compared to how bad that looked on Monday, that's amazing, just because I don't know if any of you have had experience getting hit with an AED. I unfortunately did last year, and that is not something that I will forget or I will ever take lightly. What do you think, Byron?
You know, I played football, you know, for a long time. You know, I've coached. And, you know, I've never, you know, seen anything like that. Like, you know, you see, like, you know, the ankles and the shoulders and the wrists and, you know, stuff, you know, concussions and, you know, stuff like that. You know, I was in law enforcement, you know, every now and then, you know, we have that happen. But, you know, for that to happen, you know, on, you know, national TV and, you know, the way, you know, the players circled up around them, you know, so people didn't see actually, you know, what was going on. I thought that was great what they did. Yeah, you know, because people really don't need to see all that stuff. You know, as far, you know, people would be with the cameras and everything. But, you know, I want to, you know, send a special shout out to, you know, the athletic staff that were, you know, they were on point. You know, they saw this guy, you know, had it, you know, whatever issue, you know, he had at the time, and they went out there and they saved his life. You know, that athletic trainer and the doctors and the medical staff and all, they were on point, because, you know, if they didn't do what they did, that guy wouldn't be here. He would die right on the field. But, you know, I'm glad he's, you know, doing well, and, you know, I hope, you know, he lives a long life. But, you know, that was, you know, really something awful to see.
Yes, Dita. Chris, what are your thoughts on the situation?
Yeah, it was just jarring. I think the fact that it was a Monday night football game, all the eyes, it's the end of the season. There was a lot riding on that game. So it was a special set of circumstances. And like Byron mentioned, you know, everybody did the right thing. And I think that's what is refreshing about this situation, where so much has like gone wrong in a very public forum over the last couple of years, even in sports. It was good to see everybody from all sides, you know, really come together and make sure that his health was paramount. And it's been, you know, they've been very transparent on the updates. And I think that let everybody, you know, have a sense of relief knowing he was doing better. But yeah, just a crazy situation. I don't think I've ever seen anything, you know, quite like that on that stage. It was, you know, I had the game on after the Rose Bowl ended, and it was just kind of in the background, and all of a sudden, you know, I picked up on the audio, what had happened. And it was just it was jarring to see.
Absolutely. And Tyler, I know that you also played college football. So with your experience with that and seeing what happened, what were you thinking?
Honestly, it was one of the – I've never seen anything like it. Just it almost looked as if – it appeared as if he all of a sudden got shot. He all of a sudden just collapsed. And then the cameras went away, and they did a good job, TV, of actually not really focusing on it, so you didn't get to really see much. But then just the reaction by the players was so different. I mean, you see people react kind of with their heads down if they have a teammate that, like, breaks his leg or tears his ACL, but not, like, the tears in their eyes, people crying, and, like, everyone praying. You had the host on ESPN saying a prayer. And someone of strong faith like myself, I know Dan Orlovsky is, that's why I did it, was awesome to see people just turn to God, just like pray for strength in that moment. It was, and for not to be disenfranchised at all, but to be accepted, people like really kind of come together. That was a good part of it. But as far as what happened, do they still have total clarity? Do they know exactly what he suffered? I know it was something to do with his heart, but do they know exactly? Do they have any final diagnosis? Is it still up in the air? Because, I mean, it was just all of a sudden he just collapsed. It was like he was just struck. He gets up and he collapses. So, do you know, does anyone out here, has there been any final diagnosis of what they believe happened?
I mean, I know that they had talked about a few different things for part of, instead of AFib, VFib, they were talking about, but I don't believe that the doctors really had said 100% what it was, just because I think right now they're more just focused on the treatment plan for him. I mean, I don't think he's going to be playing football anytime soon, but you know what? The main thing is, like the doctor said when he woke up, you've won the game of life. I am curious also to hear about that, just because for me, I've dealt with a few heart issues, so I would never want to go through that again, and frankly, just watching how it was for him, you just had to feel for him. And also they did talk about it. It was the assistant athletic trainer for the Buffalo Bills. He was the one who, they're saying, was the one who was the main person who saved his life and did the CPR in the beginning, which I believe that he's definitely going to be recognized by the end of the year, no matter what, and he should, because he was Johnny on the spot and made it happen. One thing I do kind of have to say is, did find out later on he did graduate from Ohio State. So you know what? I can take that. So
hope you took it better than the game the other day.
Yeah. That is true. Hey, even still, I mean, I just wanted to kind of bring up about DeMar Hamlin, just because, I mean, thoughts and prayers, absolute. But the thing is, we're able to appreciate that he's still here, and even though he's got a long road to recovery, just seeing how he's already getting better, that is something that is definitely amazing. And we just, I'm not going to speak for everybody else, but I definitely look forward to seeing how he continues to recover and just to see what's next for him. But that being said, why don't we talk about what happened last week on New Year's Eve? We had TCU in Michigan, and that was a game that could have gone a few different ways, and especially even up until the last play. Chris, what did you think about that?
Well, I think that Michigan, a lot of the folks that had Michigan winning, and there were plenty of them, myself included, thought that Michigan would be able to run a conventional offense and the physical, you know, superiority of the Big Ten and this Michigan Wolverines offense, particularly on the lines of scrimmage, was just going to be too much for TCU to handle. That is not what happened. And you mentioned that this could have gone several different ways. I said this with you and Garrett last week. I wasn't sure that JJ McCarthy, I trusted him. You know, if there was any of these four teams where the coaching and the quarterback play was probably going to possibly cost one of the two favorites, it was going to be Michigan. And I think McCarthy was very late on some of his progressions, and you know, the result was two pick six, 14 points. You know, this ended up being a 6-point game. So you can essentially say he lost the game, despite him coming out and playing a hell of a lot better in the second half. But by then the damage was done. Texas Christian, hats off to them. You know, they played out of their mind. That 3-3-5 defense that they run really overwhelmed. You had guys on Michigan's offensive line blocking the wrong people, and they were able to get pressure on McCarthy and several hits in the backfield and tackles for losses just by rushing three, because there was just causing so much confusion. And I just think that Michigan vastly underestimated what they were up against. And those two pick sixes, man, that was the ball game right there.
Aaron, what about you?
Well, the defense they ran, you know, Tulsa, where I played originally, you know, a while back, you know, the 3-3-5, you know, defense, you know, ran that, you know, they ran it pretty well, you know, for a while. And I'm still trying to figure out why they ran that play on the goal line, Michigan, instead of lining up like the big boys that they supposed to be and just powering it in instead of, you know, getting fancy, you know, and cute. Supposedly, you know, their line is supposed to have been the best line, you know, I guess, the last 2 years in all of college football. And you mean to tell me those five big Michigan Wolverines couldn't move the three, you know, three down linemen for TCU? You know, just watching it was just weird that, you know, how long were they off, like 30 days or whatever they're off Michigan, you know, from the last game they played? The way they played, you know, they had never seen the offense, no defense that they never practiced against, it like was something totally new, because like you said, you know, it was a lot of missed blocking assignments, and it was just the coaching that, you know, that it just seemed like they weren't prepared. That's just what it looked like to me.
That's fair. I mean, we're not going to get into it today, but probably next week I will talk about what's starting to go down in Michigan, and we'll see how that goes. But we're just going to let that play out for now. Tyler, what are your thoughts about the first game of the doubleheader?
Oh, that's such a – from Ohio State fan, that sounds like a total troll start. anyways, to move on. I wasn't on the show last week because I was watching my Oregon Ducks seal a 1-point victory in the Holiday Bowl. But I would have picked Michigan. I thought they were going to, like Chris said, be just too physical at the line of scrimmage and be able to wear TCU down. Obviously, that didn't happen. There's a couple of reasons. One, Blake Corum wasn't playing. That's kind of their every down back. And Donovan Edwards, who's kind of the change of pace back, who's more of a slasher, was dealing with an injury. I don't know if you noticed. He had a he had a brace on. He had a what do they call it, club on his one hand. So he was one-handed, and he's not really a between-the-tackles type runner. He's more of a slasher-type guy. So I think that – and the fact that TCU game plan to make them do something else, make them beat them through the air, make J.J. McCarthy beat them, and J.J. McCarthy was just not good at times. I mean, he ended up having
all right, Tyra, we'll get you back in a second just because, well, you're getting hit with a little bit of traffic, it sounds like, or a little less reception. But, yeah, he's definitely right. I did notice that for him because you can see that compared to how he had been in the past two or three games beforehand, you could tell he was, I think he'd rushed for over 475 yards, like 8 touchdowns. Whereas when you watch him in the first half, like within the first 2 or 3 running plays he made, you could just tell that something was off because instead of him getting like a really long, I think he got one really long gain in the beginning, like a 19-yard gain. But that was when they were going from their side of the field into TCU territory. After that, though, you could tell that it wasn't going as well. And so something, like Tyra said, you could tell something was off with him. And you could even tell that at times McCarthy looked like he was injured too, like because I think he was having either an ankle or something, because when he was trying to walk around, he was just kind of trying to push through it, kind of like how Caleb Williams did in the Pac-12 championship game. But the only problem with that was you could just tell that as much as he was going to try to do it, it just wasn't going to work out as well. Although watching him on that fourth down play when their last chance, you expected something other than what they did, because like you said, Byron, instead of them trying to showboat, they should have just gone to like smash mouth football and just tried to run it in, because then that could have worked. Because I mean, the only comparison that I can bring up right now for that was the Patriots and the Seahawks when Malcolm Butler got his game-ending interception instead of giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch, which you know that some people in Seattle will never forgive Pete Carroll for doing that.
Me being one of them.
I mean, I can't blame you. I can't blame you because...
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because there was a pick that Dugan threw to, I think he was going to Davis, not Johnston, but they're thrown to the number two. And same play, the guy alligator arms it, it gets, you know, right into the defender, you know. But, you know, Dugan wasn't perfect in this game either, but, you know, TCU lives by explosive plays and they got just enough of those. Quentin Johnson had over 100 yards after the catch. You thought Michigan would tackle a little better than they did, but you know that wasn't the case. And even when TCU lost their leading rusher Miller, the backup comes in and has over 150 yards. So there was just a lot of breakdowns on Michigan on both sides of the ball. You know, you thought that this defense, which some people had thought maybe was a little better than last year, a little more complete than last year, at least not, you know, discounting the edge rushers they lost. But Horned Frogs, they racked up 263 yards. I'm sorry. Absolute breakdown by Michigan's defense.
All right. We're about to have Tyler back. Welcome back, sir. We got some of what you were talking about, but...
Yeah, where was I? Sorry, I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm like in the mountains.
Talking about Edwards being one-handed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I only got that far.
Yep.
Oh, great. Okay. So, yeah, so okay. So, I was talking and I'm not really looking at my phone because I'm driving. So, now I am looking at my phone because I'm going to lose you guys again. You look good, by the way, Alan. Anyways, let me know if you're. One note was he had a club was on Edwards' hand. Did you guys notice that?
A little bit, and
he's not really a between the tackles guy. He's kind of a change of pace guy, slasher type guy. So the fact that he was a little bit handicapped with the arm, and the fact that Blake Corum was obviously hurt, that did impact. Well, it impacted this game because TCU literally was making Michigan throw. They were stacking the box, saying, J.J. McCarthy, you have to make plays. And J.J. McCarthy didn't do it. Chris said it earlier. He was late on throws through two pick sixes.
Mm-hmm.
And he played better in the second half, but he was amazing. He didn't make the big mistakes, and they were able to do enough offensively. And when you get 14 points on two turnovers, I mean, that's a heck of a difference it can make for a game. So good victory by TCU. I don't think it would always play out that way, but on that night, they were able to make Michigan do something that Michigan was not as good at doing. They made some mistakes, they made them pay, and they're able to pull off the victory.
That's true. I mean, it was definitely – it was a good game. I mean, you definitely, Chris, last week you talked about how you were waiting to see what play Max Duggan was going to make that was going to be like the wow factor. I mean, I'm not really sure this game he had to do that, but in a way that means that coming up for the next game, we may see it in that game. But before that, though, we did have Ohio State and Georgia, and that was a close game, although, Chris, when we talked about it, we talked about how Cade Stover was going to be one of the guys that we wanted to watch. You said that he was going to be the dude in the game, and he really was. And when he went down, that was bad. Although the other thing that I really think changed the game was when Marvin Harrison Jr. got hurt. And I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but that looked like targeting to me. So until you can prove otherwise, no. I'm going to say that was targeting.
No. You got to go take those scarlet and red glasses off, man. No, it's not targeting. I fought with several Ohio State fans. If they would have called target on that, I would stop watching college football. The guy literally turned his shoulder. I'm sorry he got hurt. What are we supposed to be playing, flag football?
When he came down, how he looked like his whole body went limp.
Okay. It's football.
It happens.
There just was nothing in the play. It was not helmet to helmet. It was not – he did not lead with his helmet. He literally led with his shoulder. I'm sorry that Marvin Harris got hurt, but – that was not targeted.
We can agree to disagree on that, but...
Well, I know all Ohio States disagree because it didn't go in their favor, but that doesn't make it true.
fair enough, but that was still a heck of a game. And, I mean, Unfortunately, me and my daughter were watching the game. We missed watching the ball drop to watch the end of the game. So I had to have her watch and I had to pull it up on YouTube or something else later on so she could watch the ball drop because the game lasted till after midnight. But Tyler, since you've already expressed your view for if it wasn't targeting, what do you think about the game? Okay, I want to hear your view first.
Yeah, so I wasn't on here again last week. I don't know if I said that. You got that on here earlier when I said it. But I would have picked Georgia. But I would have made the caveat that the one team that I believe in the playoff that could upset Georgia was Ohio State. And the reason why I thought that could happen is because Ohio State does have elite guys on the outside. Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Ogbuku, Julian Fleming, Cade Stover as a tight end. They have one of the best quarterbacks in college football. Guy's going to be a top 10 pick probably. So I'm like, if those guys get hot, if they make some plays, it's possible for them to beat anyone. And that turned out to be true. Georgia could not really stop C.J. Stroud. A lot of criticism had gone at Stroud after he played the Michigan game, saying he couldn't handle pressure, he needed such a clean pocket. Sometimes he doesn't play as good as in big games. But he threw for 300 plus yards, four touchdowns, ran for another almost 100 yards, and that was against possibly the best defense in college football. So Stroud did his part. Harrison, when he was healthy, did his part. Aboku made some plays. And they did their part. Unfortunately, Georgia, first of all, just showed a lot of heart to be able to come back after being down by that much. And Stetson Bennett made the plays when he needed to. He did not play very good in the first half. He made a horrible interception. But when it mattered, he did make the plays. But Ohio State still had a chance to win it at the end. The guy probably kicked the worst field goal I've seen in recent memory. I mean, literally, like, that was almost like – that was like a comedy. But Stroud gave him a chance. It was a great game. That was one of the best. People say, like, I heard them say that TCU versus Michigan State was. And see, I didn't find that one of the best games. There was too many mistakes in that game to be a good game. Whereas the Georgia-Ohio State game was just super clean. And it was just two heavyweights going at it. I found that game to be the better game of the two. And I think the winner of it was going to be the national champion. I mean, of course, Michigan can always beat Ohio State. We've obviously seen that. But I think Ohio State would be. I think Ohio State would have easily beaten TCU. And Georgia is probably, hopefully, TCU is not the first team in the national title game to die. I think that was the national title game. It was a great game. I enjoyed it very much. Ohio State played great. Georgia was just able to get the victory in the end.
Definitely true. And Byron, what takes did you get from the game?
I didn't realize that Marvin Harrison Jr., how good this kid was. I didn't realize he was 4 inches bigger than his father. I didn't. Yeah, he's you know, and he's only what, a freshman. Yeah, I hate, you know, sophomore. So yeah, he has a bright future. You know, CJ Stroud, you know, I think he, you know, earned himself a little bit more money and maybe move. Yeah, he's going to be top five pick, but maybe even higher, because now, you know, they realize that he can run instead of just sitting back there and, you know, picking apart people, you know, normally. But he made himself a lot of money, you know, because he does have the wheels, you know, to get out of danger, you know, every now and then. And the guy that I think lost a little bit was Jalen Carter, the tackle or nose guard or whatever he is for Georgia. He just looked lazy. He looked a lot bigger than, you know, maybe the layoff, you know, maybe, you know, he went home to mom, like, you know, we all did back in the day, and, you know, put on a couple pounds, but he just looked like slower. And, you know, I don't know the fact, you know, they're playing indoors or whatever, you know, maybe the heat has something to do with it, but he just didn't look well. In the defense, they weren't the typical shut them down defense, you know, that Georgia's had in the past. And, or maybe, you know, most likely it was just that Ohio State was that good. But, you know, that probably, like you said, that probably was the, you know, the better game, you know, than the Michigan TCU guy. I like that game a lot better.
Chris, what did you think of the game, sir?
Yeah, just a disgusting amount of talent on the field for both teams, and it showed out. It was an exceptional football game to watch. CJ Stroud, I think he's played himself into the top three picks. I couldn't argue against picking him number one now. You know, he had 348 yards, four touchdowns, and everything that we said was going to disrupt Stroud in this game, he faced that criticism and passed with flying colors. You know, there were plenty of long dropbacks, movement in the pocket, not just the typical quick throws of the outside that we've seen Ohio State make a living off of. His career high for single rushes in a game before this game was three. And in the Peach Bowl, he ends up running it for six times for 66 yards. He totally went off script at times and flourished. You know, it was a great game by him. Harrison getting knocked out of the game, kind of like when Jameson Williams went down last year for Alabama against Georgia, it just changed everything. Georgia was no longer, you know, they were daring him to keep they were confident that their secondary, while they'd struggled up to that point, they could keep things in front of them without Harrison on the field. And that's what they did. You know, that knockout hit by Javon Bullard, I don't think it was targeting. It was just a tough football play. And unfortunately, Harrison, he couldn't get up after that. And that changed everything. But that being said, you know, Stroud, he still had the big run to put him in field goal range. But I think that's where the criticism maybe of Ryan Day is valid. What were you thinking? You know, that was not a chip shot field goal by any means, yet you ran to, you know, just a simple dive that got nothing. I think they lost a yard on that first down. Mm-hmm. And then two throws, one of which Stroud almost spun into a sack, which would have ended the game right there. So questionable, you know, Stroud showed a lot of courage getting him into that position. And then, of course, you mentioned it, the worst field goal of all time. just a thud ending to what was a beautiful college football game.
Yeah, no, watching that with my daughter, when we saw the field goal go up, and then we turned the channel and saw the ball drop, it was like, well, maybe next year we get to watch the ball drop, just because we were hoping for something better to end the year on. And unfortunately, we saw that field goal. I mean, Noah Ruggles, I'll give him credit. For the time that he was at Ohio State after coming in from North Carolina, he only missed 4 field goals his entire Ohio State career for 2 years, and he only missed 1 extra point. So, I mean, he was money for the most part, but he shouldn't have been in that position. They should have figured out a way to get a few more yards, because when you looked at that kick, I've seen passes in basketball look better than that kick. I mean, it was just horrible. Because, I mean, I was watching, I look at the kick, I'm like, okay, oh, crap. Because it just, how it went up, and then you just looked at it coming down, it's like, well, at least it was a good year, and we almost did it. But it's like that old ABC sports motto, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Because other than the Missouri game, it felt like Ohio State truly had him on the ropes. The thing that was funny, though, I don't know if you guys noticed this, Myatt Williams only played, I think, 5 carries the whole game. Like, he really did not play. And see, for him, he was their back that when it was time for him to, like, you needed the tough yards, he was the guy who would usually get them. He didn't even play the second half. He only played in the first half, and he'd had the tape on his ankles up to his knees, and he had them cut it off so he could go back in when he was first playing. But I noticed him being gone, although, Chris, like you had talked about, when I saw Cade Stover have to go to the hospital because his back was hurting, that's when he knew something was wrong, because I watched him play all year. And there were a few times he took some of the biggest hits I've seen a person take, and he would always get back up. But when he literally hurdled that one player, that one Georgia player, and then came down, you could tell something was off with him, which that was a shame. But he still felt like the game had a chance. It wasn't over, but when Marvin Harrison Jr. went down, that's when you could tell there was definitely a difference. But C.J. Stroud, like you said, he was able to run around and when it counted, so that it wasn't a blowout like, well, we all predicted when we made our picks. We all had predicted that it was going to be a blowout. Luckily, that didn't happen. Although, now we've got the championship game, Georgia against TCU.
So you guys all predicted Georgia was going to pull out Ohio State?
We predicted they were going to win by 2 or 3 touchdowns, I believe. I believe that's what we all predicted. Although I said from my heart, I had predicted Ohio State, but I said in reality, I predicted that Georgia was going to win. Just because as much as I wanted them to win, I really thought Georgia was going to either blow them out, not as bad as like what happened at the beginning of the year, but I figured it was not going to be as close of a game as it was, and I was surprised, but I was not sad that it was such a close game, because it reminded me of 2014 when Ohio State and Alabama played. I didn't get the ending I wanted like I did that year, but that game, just with how it was back and forth, you just were sitting back, relaxing, and you're just like, wow, this is a game that you're watching both people, both teams just give their best shots. And, I mean, that game, it was still up until about a minute or two left in the game. It was still, okay, who's going to win this game? Because Alabama, I think Blake Sims was the quarterback that year, and he was bringing them back every time. It wasn't until Zeke Elliott got the 85-yard touchdown run to where the game was basically put out of reach. But now we get to think about Georgia and TCU. So besides Max Duggan for Georgia, Stetson Bennett, and then for TCU, Max Duggan, who are some of the other players that you're going to be watching out and seeing as impact players during the game? Start with you, Byron. What do you think?
I love the wide receiver for TCU, the Johnston or whatever the kid's name is. I think he's going to be a beast, you know, at the next level. You know, Max Duggan, you know, he's like a gunslinger. But I'm going to go with, I love TCU because I originally signed with TCU coming out of high school. So I was back in the day when the FA dry era went, well, it was pretty bad. But yeah, you know, those are the two, you know, that I liked with them. And then in Georgia, you know, Stetson Bennett, you know, I thought he should have won the Heisman, you know, he should have went to the best player, you know. I liked him, you know, because, you know, he's a winner. You know, he's 5'10". He shouldn't be out there, but for some way, you know, somehow, you know, the kid's a winner. And, you know, I like him. And, you know, defensively, I want to see, you know, Jalen Carter play a lot better, you know, than he did, you know, the last game, you know, maybe, you know, that, you know, run a couple stadium stairs or whatever, but, you know, he needs to play a lot better than he played the last game.
All right. Tyler, what about you?
Oh, yeah, pretty good players you mentioned there. For TCU, Quentin Johnson is definitely probably the best wide receiver. He's probably going to be the highest pick wide receiver in the upcoming draft. He's a guy that has to have a good game. And the guy I'm interested to see him possibly go against is Kaylee Ringo, who I did not think had the best game against Ohio State. I actually had time for thought. Ringo, a consensus five-star, top 10 player coming out of high school, has all the ability in the world. He's a world-class sprinter, big. This guy's a quintessential NFL cornerback. But for him to solidify the top corner in the draft, I would like to see him be a little more consistent. He got beaten a couple times in the Ohio State game. Now, Ohio State has great wide receivers. Marvin Harrison is perhaps the best wide receiver in college football. But there's been a couple times this year where Kaylee Ringo has maybe not played up to his potential. I don't think he's played as good as his abilities say it should. Obviously, Jalen Carter. Yeah, Jalen Carter was pretty winded in the last game. It's kind of weird. He's still just a man-child in the middle. I think he'll play a lot better this game. I think he's going to be promised for TCU. And then obviously, Georgia always called linebacker and running back play. Didn't see them run the ball. Well, actually, they ran the ball fairly well against Ohio State. But they actually relied on Stetson Bennett in the passing game, which is very unusual. I actually kind of thought Georgia maybe, because they ran pretty well on Ohio State, but they seemed to kind of be reluctant to run. They kind of consistently wanted to go through the air, and I don't think that's as much Georgia's game. That was one confusing thing about Georgia's offense, especially in the first half. I just thought they were a little reluctant to run, and I don't know why they were. So, yeah, outside of that, I'm interested to see. I can't think off the top of my head, but what is TCU's normal started running back called?
Kendre Miller.
Yeah, injured in they need him to be healthy because he had a pretty game run for 100-yard play. You'll have a chance. But Miller having a good game. Quinn Johnson makes some plays. Duggan, who's played great all year, runner-up from Heisman. makes the plays. You never know. You never know. It's sports. It's football.
That's totally fair. Chris, what about you?
But they need.
Yeah, so I think that the players that may not end up suiting up for both teams could those are huge losses. If Kendre Miller 1400 yards, if rushing, if he can't go, that's a huge part of TCU's offense. It actually averages more yards in the second half of games and overtime, which plays into what TCU has done all year long with these crazy comebacks. You know, you have a strong running game that they don't abandon even when they're down big. If he can't play, that is a huge, huge loss for the Horned Frogs. Georgia's side of the ball, same thing. If they're, we haven't even talked about this, Darnell Washington, if he's not able to go, that affects what Georgia wants to do offensively. Huge. They can't go 12 personnel if he's not on the field. And that plays right into TCU's hand running that 3-3-5. You know, they're not having to worry about Washington, you know, get up to the second level on blocking. For the players that definitely are, man, you saw that speed, that Florida high school track, real track speed out of Arian Smith, ran a 10-10 in high school. He's blazing fast, and you saw it on display against Ohio State. I think that if he is lined up against any of the safeties for TCU, you know, TCU has great corners. They got Tomlinson's nephew who won the Jim Thorpe Award, and then Bud Clark, who had one of the pick sixes. But if Arian Smith is on any of those other DBs on TCU, goodbye. They are toast. It's going to be a wide open touchdown, similar to what they did to the Buckeyes. So, and I agree with Tyler on what Bennett left in the run game for Georgia. I think that, you know, when he had 5-7 yards, he should have definitely tucked it and ran. And I think that's why you saw Kirby getting on him at the end of the first half. He can't do that again against the Horned Frogs. If it's there, he's got to use his legs, which he's been known to do in the past. He's a far better athlete than people give him credit for. So I think those are the some of the highlight players to watch in the championship game.
Okay. While I was looking at this, I also noticed that the FCS, they have their championship game coming up as well, where you have North Dakota State. They're the 2- or 3-time defending champion. They're going against Montana State. I don't know if you guys watched either of those playoff games.
South Dakota State,
yes. Apologies, but yeah, Nevada. I don't know if you watched the games that were leading up to the championship game, but the Montana State game, they were outside in the snow, and it was negative 20 degrees, I believe. So I'm kind of curious about that. Chris, have you seem like you've looked up, paid attention to that a little bit. What do you think?
Oh yeah, you can't go against the dynasty, man. North Dakota State, that is by far and away, you know, the team in the FCS level. Yeah, I watched their playoff game against Incarnate Word. My wife actually went into labor during that football game, so it'll always be a memorable one to me. But I've been a big Bison fan for a while, you know. I just appreciate what they've been able to do at that level. So I would never bet against – you just don't go against dynasties, right? And I know South Dakota State rivalry game, they've already beat the Bison once this year, and I think that game was in Fargo. But like I said, I mean, this team's won it all like 12 times. You, how could you go against them?
I agree. Byron, I'm not sure if you really have watched a lot of the FCS, but if you had to pick from what you just listened for Chris, who would you pick? Would you pick South Dakota State, or would you pick Montana State?
I watched like a little bit of it, and it was kind of cold just watching it. The game that I watched, it just looked cold watching it and miserable. Montana State, because I think one of my teammates, Bob Babbage, coach, I think he was the head coach at North Dakota State at one time. But they play good football. North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Montana State, they play good football up there. Where you figure Carson Wentz came from up there, so that says it's something different.
Yeah, no, the year that they won with him as a quarterback, he'd actually been injured half the year and came back and played in the championship game before going in the NFL draft. Because I remember watching that year among a lot of others. I mean, I think South Dakota State's going to win again. Ty, what do you think real quick?
Well, I have love for the FCS. I played in the FCS, but why are we talking about this? It's like Bird and you're like, what? You're like wandering off while we're talking and found an FCS game to talk about. Who's playing?
North Dakota State, South Dakota State.
Oh, great. Well, hey, Midwest guy, Minnesota. I got actually recruited by North Dakota State coming out of a junior college. So, obviously, they've won, 7, 8 national titles in the last decade. It'd be hard. I don't know. I'd just be guessing because I'm just assuming that North Dakota State is probably going to win again because they have. But I really don't follow FCS football, unfortunately, and I don't really know. So I'm rooting for a South Dakota State. Why not? South Dakota is the better. If you've ever been up to the Midwest area, South Dakota is one of the most beautiful states. North Dakota State's ugly. It's cold. It's awful. Like, no wonder they're good at football. So I'm going with my boys from here, South Dakota State.
All right. The main reason why I did say this, Tyler, is because since we're talking about a national championship for the FBS, I was trying to put in the FCS national championship because, I mean, you do have both of them being played this weekend. One being played on the weekend and the main one for us, Monday night. So time for the picks. Brian, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, I had a certain person laugh at me last year when I picked Cincinnati to beat Alabama. So, of course, I'm going with the underdog again, those Horned Frogs, TCU.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm doing it again. Yep. Sticking with it.
All right. Do you have a score, you think?
Ooh, let's see. It's going to be high. 45-37. Okay. TCU.
What about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, would I love if TCU could pull off the upset? Yeah, I'm going to root for TCU. I'll be on the record saying I want the underdog to win. It really, and all year, it seems like in some ways they have the team of destiny. Yeah, they keep on coming back. They upset Michigan in the semifinal. I just can't see it. I just can't see how they can match up. They had such a good game plan the last game to come and stop, but I just don't see it. I think they're too good up front, Georgia. Chris did make a point earlier. Darnell Washington is hurt. He is probably the best pass blocking. He's basically, when he's out there, it's like having 6 offensive linemen out there. He's just such a big mammoth guy and a great blocker. I actually forgot to mention, too, Blake Bowers. And that is a guy who was kind of quiet the last game, but I don't think he's going to be quiet this game. I think this game, he goes off. I don't think there's anyone on TCU that can match up with him. And between him and some of the guys that you had, Adonai Mitchell, however you say his first name, who came back from his high ankle sprain, he had missed 8 games. And he really is an explosive guy. And Aaron Smith, he has obviously the ability to get deep. I just don't see how they stop him. I see this being like a 38-21 game, and they're able to kind of seal in that fourth quarter and run the ball on them. And I think Dugan's going to try to do his thing. I think he's a tough guy. He's going to try to make some plays, but I think they're going to have trouble running the ball. If Kendra Miller is hurt, I really don't see them running, being able to run at all. And outside of Quentin Johnson, who they probably are going to talk to put, make sure that they have Ringo or whoever on him to slow him down. I don't know if they have anyone else that can really take the top off the defense to get behind the Georgia guys. So I think they're going to struggle to score the ball. So 38-21 to Georgia.
Alrighty, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to go against the Bulldogs in this matchup just from a sheer talent standpoint and the fact that they took out the other team in this playoff that had just as much talent as they did. You know, I don't think that, you know, Miller's going to play, and if he does, he's not going to be at 100%, and that's going to really, really hurt the Horned Frogs that had so much running success against Michigan. I don't see them replicating that again against Georgia, at least not enough. That being said, I think it's going to be a close game because this college football season, especially the bowl season and playoff games, have been so fun to watch. It just can't end in like a, you know, a down note, right? It can't end in a blowout. So I'm going Georgia 45, Texas Christian University 43. Bulldogs win a close one.
Wow, okay. Like I did last time, my heart, I would pick TCU to win 42-31. But in reality, until they lose, I have to go with Georgia. And I think that it's going to be probably 48 to say 42. And so
I'll finish and I'll say that.
Okay. I think that Stetson Bennett's probably going to be the MVP or the offensive player of the game. And then we'll get ready for next year. Go ahead, Tyler.
Okay. So Kendra Miller's probably not going to be able to play, more than likely, but even if he does play, my question to Byron and you, how in the world is TCU going to score over 40 points? Remember, they had two pick sixes against Michigan. So can you please tell me how that offense with that talent is going to score 42 points? If you can decipher it for me, if you can break it down, and I need to hear this. How is that the players that they have on that team going to score over 40 points on Georgia?
Maybe they won't have to. Maybe the defense does it for them again.
There you go.
Again? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. College football is just wacky, man. Like, I know what you're saying. And this is the biggest point spread in title game history. And rightfully so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that absolutely should be that much. 12.5, I think, is what I saw it at last. The only reason I'm saying it's going to be a close game is just because, you know, my heart yearns for one more great college football game this season. Mm-hmm. I don't think Georgia's going to lose. I don't even think they're in danger of losing, but I really hope I see a close game.
Nobody plays defense. That's why, you know, it just seems like, you know, okay, all right, just everybody scored in the 40, everybody scored in the 50s, and, you know, we just have to out, you know, who has a ball at the end. So I'm going to stick with TCU. They're going to pull it out. They're going to put up a lot of points, and I'm going to stick with that one.
Well, I think that with Hodges Thompson being the reigning Jim Thorpe winner, I think that Stetson Bennett, I believe he may throw 2 or 3 interceptions this game, because even though he's more of a game manager, I think that they're going to make him make the throws. And I think against TCU's defense, it's not going to be as easy as people are going to think it's going to be. Because they're going to think that maybe TCU, okay, their defense isn't as good, so we'll be able to get a lot more plays over them. And I think that TCU's defense is going to come to play. So hopefully that answers your question, Tyler.
No. No one gave an argument for scoring 40 points. Because yeah. I do realize college football has become where there is not a lot of defense, teams to play defense. But you know who does play defense? Georgia. And I know that Ohio State scored, but Ohio State has ridiculous players on the outside. Ridiculous players. And a couple players for Georgia that are going to be top first-round picks honestly had strangely, oddly, suspiciously terrible games in Jalen Carter and Kaylee Ringo. I just don't see that being the case again. And TCU does have a great player in Quentin Johnson, don't get me wrong, but that's one guy. And Kendra Miller, if he played, I think could do some stuff on the ground. And then I still would not pick him to score over 40, maybe 30. But without Kendra Miller, I really don't know how they're going to run the ball. And then they're one-dimensional. And then they're going to know they're going to try to get it to Quentin Johnson, so he'll be single. They won't even single, double team, whatever. They'll make him throw it to someone else. And I just don't think TCU has other weapons that can compete against Georgia. Trust me, I want TCU to win. I will be rooting for TCU. I want this underdog story, a team that was, I don't think, rated in the top 25 preseason, that's made it all the way to the national title to play the big, bad, defending national champion. But at the same time, I if I'm going to be objective about it, I was thinking about it, and I was looking at the different scenarios, and I'm like, literally, Georgia would have to play terrible. Sensabella would have to have one of the would have to have the worst game of his life. And Dugan would have to have the best game of his life. Dugan's had a great year. He's a Heisman Trophy runner up. So it's just asking a ton. And it's a national title game. I have a hard time. Georgia's wondering if they overlook them in the national title game. So that was the only unfortunate. When I saw these two teams, I was just like, man, that's just not a good matchup. Whereas I could see Ohio State, TCU would have played Ohio State, especially with a healthy Miller, they could run the ball in Ohio State. And they do have a good run defense, and they do get after the quarterback, and Stroud has struggled when he's under pressure, so that could cause some problems for Ohio State. And Ohio State has been a little inconsistent this year. So I could put an argument for TCU to upset Ohio State, like they upset Michigan. But I'm just having trouble doing that in this game. And I just wanted to know how you guys came to these 40-point conclusions.
Sprinkling the fairy dust.
Yep, yep.
I was a horn frog for a minute. I'm riding that wave.
I really
don't care.
You must be purple. You must be on that good dust. But of course, yeah. You can wear your Washington gear when you're in for them.
I'll blend right in.
All right. Well, guess there's only a few things left to say. First of all, it's been a heck of a year so far, guys, and well, this is going to be a great way to end it. The only question is, when? Well, we know when. It's just how and what moments are going to happen in the game just to see who is going to step up and make a difference and then, I guess, get their draft stock ready. That being said, though, if we're going to try to reach you guys outside of here, how would we do that? Start with you, Byron.
Facebook. I kicked myself off of Twitter. Just Facebook, that's it. Don't mess with Twitter.
So Facebook, Brian Jones?
That's it. Byron Jones, that's it.
Okay. Easy. What about you, Chris?
At NolCore on all social media and SouthernGentlemanSports.com.
And Tyler, how about you, sir?
At the TurnerCast. You can also see I do some stuff on sportscast.net.
All right. For me, you could either see me on Twitter at Alan F. West, Instagram, alan.west.46, and I don't really use Facebook much anymore, but I'm still on there just so I can watch the videos or find the nice memes that come up every time. But, fellas, thank you for your time. Let's see how it goes, and sit back, relax, and let's enjoy the finale.